The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Cindy Fowler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the Raleigh News and Observer, the State-by-State Gardening e-newsletter, the Triangle Gardener Magazine, 1001 Hints and Tips for Your Garden by Reader's Digest, and maybe from Garden Smarts by Louise Goldbloom. We'll start with 1001 Hints and Tips for Your Garden. Here are some things to do in your garden this August. For trees and shrubs, prevent the production of palm and palmetto seedlings by pruning off immature seeds now. Use a saw to remove dead fronds flush with the trunk. And prune seed heads from crepe myrtles to encourage a few more flowers in the fall. Keep berry-producing shrubs well watered through this usually dry month. For annuals, start seed for fall transplants. Cut back tired annuals and rejuvenate with a water-soluble fertilizer. Weed, water, and fertilize as needed. Deadhead to promote extended flowering. Watch for signs of pests and diseases, especially spider mites. And replace spent annuals with heat-loving transplants for fall blooms. For perennials and bulbs, weed, water, and fertilize as needed. Fertilize summer flowering bulbs with a 5-10-10. I'm sorry, a 5-10-5, or with bone meal. Deadhead or cut back to promote plant vigor. Divide overgrown bulb clumps as the foliage dies back, and replant before the fall rains. Cut back unsightly bearded iris foliage. Watch for signs of pests and diseases. And for your roses, increase watering to twice weekly during heat and drought. Spray diluted fungicides as needed. And request new catalogs, renew mulch as needed. At month's end, prune bushes by removing dead wood and shortening long canes by 1/3 for better fall bloom. And prune climbers by cutting back side shoots. Vegetables and herbs? Plant peas, even if it seems too hot. They won't produce until temperatures cool in the fall. Plant bush beans weekly from now until mid-September. Use floating row covers to protect plants from heat and pests. Harvest herbs at their peak, just before they begin to flower, and use or preserve as soon as possible. For tomatoes, use a complete foliar fertilizer on new transplants to encourage vigorous growth and early production. Set up and use a low-volume irrigation system on the new tomatoes and mulch to conserve moisture. Watch for spider mites, which thrive in the heat of summer. For your lawns, apply post-emergent herbicides to control annual weeds in Bermuda grass. Seed, sprig, or sod new Bermuda grass lawns and maintain a regular mowing and watering schedule. Assess lawn condition for possible fall renovation. And watch for signs of pests and diseases. Apply controls as needed. For your patio and container plants, monitor these plants daily for water needs and pest control. Apply water-soluble fertilizer as needed for healthy vigor, usually every 2 to 4 weeks. And pinch back straggly plants and deadhead spent blooms to maintain a neat appearance. Replace summer annuals and failed or diseased plants with heat-tolerant tropical foliage plants. Now, from the Raleigh News and Observer, this by Nancy Brakey. Plan your fall veggie crops. Having survived July, we can now look forward to better days in the garden. That means it is time to start thinking about the third act in the vegetable garden year, fall. This is the too often overlooked season for vegetable gardens, yet it can be very rewarding, and it promises a long season of growth and productivity. It is, of course, still summer, and the air and soil remain quite warm. However, as we move into late summer over the next few weeks, many good crops await planting, mostly as young plants bought at garden centers. Already, you probably see plants that are at or near the end of their productive season and can soon be removed to make way for fall crops. These include such space grabbers as cucumbers and yellow squash. And you may discover pockets of bare ground that are ready to receive small plantings of leaf lettuce or spinach. These two crops should be high on your list and should perform well whether you sow seeds or set out young plants. When sowing seeds, make small plantings every 10 days or so, from mid-August to late September. As the weather cools, these leafy greens will keep going through the fall and well into winter. If winter is on the mild side, you can pick these crops a long time. Garden centers also offer young plants of leaf lettuce and spinach that go into the ground easily and do not need as much protection from hot late summer sun as do seedlings. Also, consider growing these crops in large containers to replace summer flowers that have played out or that you want to replace. Two root crops, beets and carrots, also make good fall crops. Both require very loose, deeply dug soil, so the roots have an easy way to expand to their best size. Be sure to thin the seedlings to the space recommended on the package for the variety. The mature size, especially of carrots, can vary widely. Another two good crops that should be grown from young plants sold in garden centers are broccoli and Brussels sprouts. They take some space and can go in the ground this month. Their roots are especially keen to develop in the slowly cooling soil of late summer and autumn. Spacing is important. Broccoli plants should go in the ground about 18 inches apart. Brussels sprouts, about 20 inches apart. Make sure seedlings and young plants do not dry out. And now ask Nancy. Question. I have an amaryllis left from last Christmas that has been in a pot the whole time. Can I set it out in a flower bed for a permanent place? Answer. Yes, but set it so that the top of the bulb, where the leaves emerge, is right at ground level. Keep it watered so the foliage keeps growing and helps to nurture a future bud. Cut off the leaves once the foliage turns yellow this fall. You may get a flower next spring, but it is more likely to take another season for one to develop. Then you should have an annual show of flowers. And now from the State by State Gardening e-newsletter, Gardening Questions You Never Really Thought to Ask, by Douglas A. Spilker, Ph.D. Often, when pulling weeds or mowing the grass, my mind drifts to some of the challenges in the world. I don't mean solving world hunger or anything, but just considering some of those gardening questions not discussed on radio shows. This happens in a stream of consciousness where one thought or question runs into another and another and so on. I often wish that I could quit mowing my grass and let the seed heads develop. Would this fill in the bare spots? I know my neighbors wouldn't like it, but I also know there are cultural reasons that this does not work. Most perennial grasses, like Kentucky bluegrass and fescues, are hybrids. They commonly do not produce viable seeds. Better keep mowing and avoid nasty letters from the Homeowners Association. Mowing has its own hazards. Last year, my oak tree was raining acorns. Mowing was like skating on marbles, driving me nuts. Why were there so many this year? Oaks typically alternate heavy acorn production years. It takes a lot of energy to produce the nuts. Therefore, less goes into making flower buds for the next season. I think off years can also occur when a late spring frost blights the flowers, reducing nut development. Though they don't produce real nuts, I don't recall having any nut sedge, also known as nut grass, in my yard last year. But there it is. Where did it come from? It may have been hiding there for a while. It is not uncommon for their persistent tubers to be tucked in with the topsoil used during yard grading. Watch also for infested soil with nursery stock that might introduce nutsedge into landscape beds. Although nutsedge is a challenge in lawns, common yellow wood sorrel, known by many names including sour clover, taste it and see why, is nearly impossible to eradicate in flower beds. Does it spread by spontaneous generation? It is important to remove plants before seed pods develop, because when ripe, they explode at the slightest touch, launching seeds as far as 10 feet. I am convinced this is how it spreads. Speaking of explosions, why do earthworm masses try to commit suicide after a heavy rain? There are several theories. I always assumed it was to keep from drowning in waterlogged soils, but earthworms thrive in moist environments. Some say it's easier for them to migrate to another location or to find mates. I like the theory that they scatter because raindrops cause soil vibrations that scare them into thinking a mole is coming. Sounds more exciting to me. Earthworms aren't the only soil-borne critters we seldom see. Why don't we see cicadas more often? Cicadas live most of their lives underground, within 2 feet of the surface, feeding on tree roots. After 13 to 17 years, nymphs emerge synchronously and in tremendous numbers. Within 2 months of their emergence, eggs have been laid and cicadas have returned underground, chewing on roots for another 13 to 17 years. Squirrels don't chew on roots, but they can chew through anything not metal, and that doesn't mean they don't chew on metal. But why do they have to gnaw on our new patio furniture? The front teeth of squirrels, just like beavers, continue growing throughout their lives. To keep them trimmed, they chew on stuff. If they run out of nuts, they chew on your house, your property, or anything else to keep their teeth trimmed. If you don't trim vines, they undoubtedly will twine around any support. What causes vines to wrap one way or the other? Most vines twine counterclockwise. About 10% go clockwise. Some do both ways. Unlike swirling water down the sink, the twining direction of vines is not dependent on whether the plant grows north or south of the equator. Simply, twining direction is genetic. Some species go one way, while others go the other way. There are many mysteries in the gardening universe, some which will never be solved, like, why do rabbits go for vegetable seedlings when they must cross yards of lush green grass to get there? And, do cutworms have a mean streak, by felling a seedling with one bite and then moving on to the next? I'm sure you have many of your own gardening mysteries that also keep your mind flowing like a stream of consciousness. Murphy's Law? I'm convinced that Murphy was a gardener. Take, for instance, my iris bed. I started with a nice assortment of bearded irises. Over the years, I lost a few for various reasons, but some always came back. Finally, one year, one color took over. Guess which one? The ugly purple-brown ones. And don't even mention my favorite yellow pear tomatoes. I searched all over town looking for transplants and found the very last one in a local nursery. I was so happy to get it planted in time for the next rain. Not more than a week later, a big storm came through. The only damage in the whole garden was the broken stem of my soul pear tomato. Murphy did it again. From the Triangle Gardener magazine. This article is by Bree Arthur. Extend your tomato growing season. Growing tomatoes is the gateway to home gardening. How many of you have memories of growing and tasting freshly picked homegrown tomatoes? Everyone loves the idea of harvesting fresh tomatoes to serve during summer meals. I mean, nothing beats a homegrown BLT. And compared to the flavorless maters sold at grocery stores, homegrown tomatoes are a well-deserved treat. America's most popular fruit is a summer favorite, but can pose some growing challenges, especially for those of us in the heat and humidity of the South. In central North Carolina, we have a really long growing season, almost too long to be one consecutive season for tomatoes. Most tomato varieties will not flourish the entire duration of our frost-free period of April to November. Instead, consider growing two crops, one planted in April, another planted in July. This will extend your harvest season while keeping your tomato plants looking bountiful and fresh. And if you did not plant tomatoes in spring, you still have time to add these to your garden. It is really easy. Just pick up a few new plants from your garden center. Pot them into big containers or plant in your garden 2 to 3 weeks after germination. As this crop begins to grow, you will be busy harvesting from your spring-planted varieties. When your spring-planted tomatoes begin to fade, simply cut the vines, tired vines, down. If anything like mine, they have grown leggy and are underperforming. The great news is your fall crop will just start hitting its stride, producing fruit as the days shorten and get cooler through October. My friend Leslie Hollick of Dallas, Texas, first introduced this method to me. She explained how summers in Dallas are too hot for tomatoes that thrive in more temperate climates with cooler nights and less humidity. It occurred to me, though, tomatoes will live through the summer in Triangle. Their performance is less than ideal as the dog days round the corner. Tomatoes have a pretty interesting history. They're native to high-altitude regions of South America. Over thousands of years, people have been breeding for bigger fruit, healthier plants, and higher yield from what was originally three species. Of course, there are a few things that can make growing tomatoes confusing. Whether you grow your tomatoes in spring or start a second crop in summer, here are a few tips. Variety selection. There are a ton of tomatoes to choose from, which makes it confusing. First, decide on what size of tomato, both plant size and fruit size. They are in three categories. You have determinate, semi-determinate, and interdeterminate growing habits. Determinate varieties have a tighter form and are often called bush tomatoes, generally referred to as hybrids. These set flowers and fruit all at once. Semi-determinate varieties continue to grow, flower, and fruit over the months of the warm season, but do not grow as tall compared to indeterminate varieties that often reach 15 feet or more. Tomatoes naturally grow on vines, so while a determinate or patio variety fits into a traditional tomato cage, indeterminate varieties need a much more robust stake to support the weight of the vines and the fruit. I recommend using cattle fence panels. From a fruit standpoint, you have slicers, paste, and cherries/grapes to choose from. Slicers have large, roundish fruit that can range in size, color, and flavor. Paste varieties like Roma are a long, slender fruit that grow in bunches. They have a meaty texture with less water. Finally, cherry or grape varieties have small fruit and are highest yielding. Cherry tomatoes are almost notorious for their long-lasting fruit set, and the plants tend to be very large and quite forgiving. They also continue to flower and set fruit even when temperatures are over 95 degrees, one of the limiting factors for slicers and paste varieties when grown in hot climates. Tomato varieties are also distinguished by broad categories related to breeding and genetic improvements. The terms hybrid, heirloom, and improved heirloom define the age and modifications. Hybrids, most often sold in retail outlets and grown by home gardeners, are reliable garden plants. They are primarily bush tomatoes and an evenly round fruit. It's the classic tomato. Varieties such as Better Boy, Big Boy, and Early Girl have long dominated the hybrid market but lack flavor and creativity. Heirloom tomatoes captured my attention. Heirlooms are varieties introduced before 1930, when only traditional breeding practices were known. This includes classics like Mortgage Lifter, which literally paid for a West Virginia man's mortgage during the Great Depression. And my favorite, Cream Sausage, which looks exactly like its name. You also have a lot of options on how to grow your tomatoes. They can be grown the traditional way, planted in the ground, either within a landscape or in a raised bed. Keep in mind, you will need to move your tomatoes into different areas each year to reduce disease pressure. To avoid soil-borne disease, you can grow tomatoes in containers. Be sure to locate them near a water source and provide ample staking. And tomatoes are a warm season crop and grow best outside in central North Carolina from May through October. Always mulch your tomatoes as soon as you plant them in the ground or in a container. Soil-borne diseases are to blame for the majority of tomato deaths. A thin layer of triple shred hardwood mulch will keep the soil from splashing up onto the lower leaves. Ever noticed how tomatoes always get sick leaves from the bottom up? This is why. This practice will lower disease pressure in a significant way while ensuring the soil remains moist and cool while reducing weed seeds. Fertilizer is another critical component for successful growing that can be confusing. I apply fertilizer upon planting and again in mid-growing season. Container-grown tomatoes will need to be fertilized more frequently to compensate for nutrient leach through the soil profile. I use 10, 15, 18 mixed into the top 3 inches of the potting soil. This ensures the fertilizer will be made available to the root zone over a period of time. I also fertilize with water-soluble fish emulsion once a month, drenching the foliage and root zone to maximize nutrient uptake. And garden events coming up? Botany, August the 4th through the 25th, Saturdays, 9:30 a.m. until 2:30 p.m. This course is introductory in nature and designed for a broad audience. It covers basic principles of botany, including taxonomy, anatomy, morphology, and physiology. Class time is divided between lectures and examining/dissecting samples. There are also opportunities for making observations in the gardens. There is a fee, and you need to pre-register. This happens at North Carolina Botanical Garden in Chapel Hill. Call 919-962-0522. 919-962-0522 for more information. And first Saturday tour, Pollination on Parade, August the 4th, 10 a.m. until 11 a.m. Enjoy a walk with a garden guide and learn about the importance of bees, butterflies, hummingbirds, and other native pollinators, and the important role that native plant gardening plays in pollinator conservation. And it's free! It happens also at the North Carolina Botanical Garden in Chapel Hill. For more information, you can call 919-962-0522. 919-962-0522. And a plantsman's tour, August the 7th, 9 a.m. until 10:30 a.m. or 6 p.m. until 6:30 p.m. Some Like It Hot with Douglas Rurin. A tour of outstanding plants for the heat of summer. There is a fee, and you need to pre-register. This happens at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum in Raleigh. Call 919-513-7005. 919-513-7005 for more information. And from Garden Smarts by Louise Goldblum. Lace bug damage is common in azaleas, usually occurring in midsummer. It causes a bronzy, stippled look, similar to mite damage. For an organic control, soap spray is recommended. And camellias are plagued by few pests, but tea scale is particularly troublesome, and spider mites can also be a problem. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Cindy Fowler, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.